For the South Asian diaspora, music is more than notes on a page and tunes that intertwine. Music has always been a vessel for culture and connectivity. And our guest today, Sid Sriram, is captain to a new era of symphonic South Asian storytelling. Welcome to SBS Spice. My name is Suhaila Sharif. Sid Sriram has had a career that's spanned across countries, languages, and industries. Yet, it's his deeply grounded roots in his own identity that has made him a globally renowned artist. From his independent work, where he walks listeners through his journey, to his playback tracks in Indian films that make you feel at home, Sid traverses two worlds that are no longer seeming like tightropes for artists in the South Asian diaspora. An offstage convo that will do more than serenade, Sid Sriram shares with us his story to today. Thank you, Sid, for joining us on SBS Spice. Now, you've just had a whirlwind tour across Melbourne and Sydney, and you are known for your versatility, your vocals, and overall your good vibes. So thank you for joining us again. Now, this isn't your first time being in Australia, though. You've been here a couple times before this. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you've noticed about your Australian audiences that is unique to us?
I feel like... So this is my third time here, and every time I've been here, beyond like being on stage, it's kind of like being out and meeting people randomly. I feel like there's just this general energy of joy here, and everyone has been very, very kind. Every conversation that I've had, there's that kind of underlying warmth, and I think that definitely flows into when I'm performing, the energy that I kind of get from audiences. There's always a certain respect, you know, that you don't necessarily see in all places. And I definitely felt that both when we performed in Melbourne and last night in Sydney as well. It felt like people were there to listen to music and take it in and really down to go on the journey, you know? So I felt that every time I've been out here and I really like it. And you go to enough places and you tell people that their city feels like home, and it starts to sound a little cliche, but I really like this place. Both cities I've been to in Australia feel very warm. So
thank you for taking us on the journey with you. I feel like, you know, being at the show yesterday, the kind of energy you had was something that a lot of, I think, especially the younger population here, the younger South Asian population, is loving the energy you bring. And so we're always going to welcome you with open arms here. So please come back down after you wrap up. Going more into your story, because we would love to know more about you. So you were born in Chennai and you moved to the US when you were just a year old. Talk to me about, you know, how Carnatic music then entered your life and stayed so deeply rooted for you, because we've heard the story of you performing it at 3 years old at your parents' concert. So your relationship with Carnatic music is something you've put forth really strongly.
Sure.
So walk us through your journey and your relationship with music.
Yeah, so I was born in India, Chennai, and we moved to the States when I was a year. My mom, she's a Carnatic musician. Her father, also a Carnatic musician. It was like in the lineage. Even before I was aware of how I felt about music and, you know, really, you know, could put sentences together or whatever, I knew that music, specifically Carnatic music, was surrounding me, and I was really born into a world that immersed me in it. When we moved to the States, we moved in 91. In 92, my mother started her Carnatic vocal music school in the San Francisco Bay Area. So as far back as I can remember, the music has just been around me. This form has been something that really kind of ushered me into the world and gave me a frame of reference, not even artistically, but just as a human being. When I was around two or three, I think my parents just noticed that I had this deep inclination for the form, and I was just like humming melodies and stuff like that. And I don't remember any of this, but I've been told. I performed on stage for the first time when I was three. So my mom was putting on a show with her students, like five or six of them. And they were all like maybe like six or seven older. But I really wanted to be on stage, probably just to get attention. But I fell in love with it like immediately. So Carnatic music has been like a lifelong it's been like oxygen, really, you know, because growing up away from the country you were born in, as I'm sure you relate to, it's like there's a challenge that comes with finding one's identity and understanding how important one's roots are. Mm-hmm. And this music form just provided me with that, and it has provided me with that my whole life, from before I could even, you know, before I can remember to now. It's really been a lifeline. It's been my way of understanding music, but also kind of like my lens of understanding the world. And I'm super, super grateful that the art form was handed to me, for sure.
Mm, it's like the way that you perform, it's like that music is in your DNA.
Yeah.
And so it's been with you this, you know, throughout your whole life. Was there ever points where, you know, your relationship with Carnatic music wavered? Because some young people, especially young South Asians, tend to have, you know, points in their life where they're more connected with that identity compared to other points, and especially through being young and having that idea of having to assimilate.
Sure.
Did you ever go through that period where you had to, you know, kind of put it on the back bench?
I like that question. I think it wavered, but not because I wanted to step away from it. Mm-hmm. And like, I felt like I had to get distance from it to assert my identity in the Western world or whatever.
It wasn't a conscious thing that you would do.
It was more because the form is like a very complex form of music, really intricate, very nuanced. And for me, it was really the thing, like if I was having a weird day at school or something, I'd come back home and I'd practice, and it sometimes feel like I was levitating above the ground. And this is as far back as like second, third grade. Mm-hmm. So it never felt like something that was uncool. You know, it was very deeply ingrained in me, and it was always something that felt like a mechanism for me to heal or understand myself or escape. But there came a point when I got a little bit older, you know, with any art form, it's really fun and magical, but there's also a lot of rigor that goes into it, especially a classical art form. So there came a point for me where Carnatic music felt like this big... like iceberg,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And I just couldn't make sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I definitely had like a period of disillusionment where I was like, I don't know if I want to spend all this time, do all this work with the form that feels so abstract and so just like large. So at that point, my relationship wavered. But that's all around that time is when I went to college, and mm-hmm. I traveled across the country. I went to college in Boston. So it was also my first time away from home. Mm-hmm. So I was super homesick. And at this time where my relationship with the form was wavering a little bit, I just actually ended up diving in even deeper. And it became my way of like getting over homesickness, understanding myself even more. You know, like every time I feel like I've kind of gravitated away from the form in some way, it's pulled me back in a very natural like almost profound way, for sure. So yeah, there have been those points in my career or my life when I was younger where I felt like maybe I should move away from it, or I found myself naturally moving away from it. And then it gets me back every time. It pulls me back.
Yeah, it's like this magnetic relationship you have, and that comes from the way that you know, are so expressive with what you perform.
Hmm.
In saying that, like, your relationship with music like spans across continents, across languages, and from Edo Sola to Shivali to Disahana, you've dabbled in different genres and styles and cultures, and ultimately like different ways of melodic storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So how does your approach as a singer and songwriter when you create music for yourself differ to when you create music for South Asian films?
Sure. So in the Indian film space, I'm what is called a playback singer. So my debut in that world was with A.R. Rahman in 2012, and that was for a Tamil film called Adiye. I mean, the song was called Adiye. And in that context, you know, there's a composer and a lyricist and a film with a situation that's already kind of set, and I'm called in to bring the song to life by way of how I sing it. And honestly, growing up, I loved Indian films, and I specifically, like, A.R. Rahman is a hero of mine. So growing up, his music was a soundtrack to my life, but I never dreamt that I would actually be a part of that industry. I had a different idea of what I was going to do.
Oh, okay.
And it very serendipitously happened. I emailed him when I was in college, and not expecting a response, but he responded, and that ultimately led to me being in that industry. So it just very, again, serendipitously happened. But in the context of my work in Indian cinema music, I feel like I'm more of an instrument. Mm-hmm. You know, like the ideas are not mine, the words are not mine, but I'm kind of pouring my soul into a vessel that's already been created. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to be able to take, you know, these lyrics and these melodies and the vision of someone else and just be able to breathe life into it. Mm-hmm. It's been a really beautiful, I've been in that industry now for just over a decade, and it's been a really beautiful process of growth within it. I get to be put in positions singing songs that I would never write, genre spaces that I would never dabble in, you know, and mm-hmm. being able to do that, I think ultimately has just like really deeply expanded my vocabulary melodically, conceptually, and so on. When I'm writing my own music, I get to create the universe, you know, and it feels like I'm deeply expressing from a space of just like intimate, like my deepest thoughts and emotions and memories and whatnot, you know. So they're very different processes in that way, but I feel like they both kind of feed each other, mm-hmm. you know. The fact that, like I was saying, in cinema music, I get to take in all this information and it subconsciously becomes a part of my own, you know, vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And then that somehow will make its way into the music that I write.
Yeah.
Something like an idea or something like that. And vice versa, you know, the fact that I make these universes and I create my own worlds, I feel like that has just given me a certain perspective and a unique, I've understood what my vision as an artist is. And I think, and it's really allowed me to like put my stake in the ground with mm-hmm. that. And that always flows into everything else I do, you know, my ethos, my spirit, and my vision for what I want to present. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very different, but I feel it's a blessing to be able to exist in these different mm-hmm. ways. I think for any artist, the most frustrating thing is being put in a box.
Mm, that's what exactly I was going to say. Is like, yeah. Do you ever feel boxed in when you have too much structure when it comes to, you know, being a playback singer? Do you ever feel suffocated that you have to follow such like, you know, you've got a story, you've got a character, and you've got a emotion that you want to convey?
No, because I get these other avenues where I can express myself. So I feel like the fact that I get to do that, and tying back to Carnatic music real quick, what makes that form really special for me is it's a very rigid set of parameters that you operate within. Mm-hmm. The rules are pretty strict. But then within that, you have to figure, it's like a highly improvised form. So within these parameters, you have to find your creative freedom, liberation, and really bring your own voice to life, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm a fan of boundaries. Mm-hmm. I think like, I like the fact that when you have certain boundaries that you're put in, then and figuring out how to be creative within that, what you create is all, like what comes of that is always something that feels very intentional and something that has depth while still being boundless. Mm-hmm. I feel like when there are no boundaries, sometimes the freedom just doesn't really find its form, mm-hmm. you know? So I love the fact that I get to do that in that context, because I also know when it comes to me making my own records and making my own albums and, you know, performing that music, I can do whatever I want mm-hmm. in that context, you know? So I have these different avenues that I get to express through and express different aspects of who I am. Mm-hmm. So I never feel boxed in. I feel mm-hmm. like my existence as an artist has just kind of been a testament to the fact that you can do whatever you mm-hmm. want. But when you're in a different context, you kind of respect what that context is, you know, mm-hmm. and I feel like you get the most out of those things if you really do respect it and understand where you're operating while still like breaking the rules. I feel like mm-hmm. my entrance into Indian cinema really kind of just like shifted a paradigm over there, because at least in Tamil and Telugu music, before I came in, it was just that we brought a different energy to the mm-hmm. industry, both in terms of how I sing in the studio, but really how we perform, mm-hmm. you know? So understanding the rules, respecting the rules, and bending them in certain ways mm-hmm. to really kind of show people that there's different ways you can do things. Mm,
definitely. Sure. Like, you're an artist who has such a good grasp on both these worlds, you mm-hmm. know? You're able to, like you said, bend the rules a bit.
Yeah.
But I also feel like you're an artist who's kind of shattered the boxes that you've been put in.
Mm.
And having that imagery of being able to create, you know, unity through connecting different styles of music and also experimenting with your own, adding your own spice to everything sure. that you do, creates like a new world of music as well for, you know, younger South Asians, because for your music, your English music specifically, you've incorporated Carnatic influences
for
and
sure.
other South Asian styles in your English music. And what we get is this beautiful harmony of just two worlds colliding in the most amazing way.
Thank
and
you.
These fusion tracks are ways that young people are celebrating two identities but also celebrating connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
So in what ways has composing these fusion tracks, as you extract, you know, elements of South Asian music, R&B music, you know, everything in that, in the musical world, essentially, how has it connected you not only with yourself, but the larger South Asian diaspora?
Sure. So I think this last, Siddharth, the album that we put out last year, was the first time that I made something that felt like it really, truly represented the whole spectrum of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like genre-wise, sonically, you know, pulling from Carnatic music and different rhythmic elements of South Asian music, but mixing that with soul, R&B, some Americana, like folk, and also electronic, you know, it was like kind of this collision of these different worlds together. It was the first time I was able to do that in a way that felt super authentic. And I've been envisioning this for a while. I went to Berklee College of Music from 2008 to 2012.
Yeah.
And when I started college there, that's when I first started experimenting with bringing together soul, R&B, and Carnatic music and just seeing how they can interact with one another. And admittedly, at first it was really corny. You know, like it didn't sound... it sounded contrived. Like mm-hmm. there'd be a song I'd write, it'd be basically like an R&B tune, and the end there'd be like the Indian section, you know, and it just felt forced. But it's been like this over a decade of chipping away, trying things out, experimenting and seeing what works, what doesn't. So when it came time to make this album, I felt like I'd worked at it for so long that it intrinsically was just a part of who I was. So I didn't have to think about it anymore. It pretty effortlessly just flowed out. And I think a song like Dear Sahana is probably the best kind of example of that, where
that's
melodically,
a beautiful song.
Thank
yeah.
you. Yeah, melodically, there'll be a moment when I'm singing a Carnatic Gamakar riff, and then mid-phrase, it switches into like a soul riff. And that stuff just happened on its own. It wasn't something that we thought about. It just kind of like flowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very grateful for that, because, you know, you spend your life having this idea in your brain, and it never really materializes. And then when it does, it's just like the aha moment where like, oh, that happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole album was really that for me. It was an affirmation of who I was to myself, first and foremost. I feel like as an artist, so much of what we do is catharsis. You know, you're trying to explore yourself, excavate yourself, and also express that and put it forth at the same time. So first and foremost, for me, it just brought me back to myself. And I felt like I might have been drifting away from the core of who I was for a little while. And
mm-hmm.
this album like snapped me back into the place and also revealed parts of me that I'd never really unearthed before.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking that forward, when we released it, I didn't really realize the impact it had on people until we did a show in LA last July. It was before we released the album, but we had a couple of singles out and the Tiny Desk had come out and
yes.
stuff. So, I did a show at the Roxy in Los Angeles, and we sold it out, which was tight. And then I got on stage, and it was primarily young South Asian kids in the audience. And that's when I was like, it really kind of clicked in my brain, where at the cost of sounding tad bit pretentious, I kind of realized like the responsibility that had been placed on my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And up until that point, I feel like I was kind of, I mean, you see it like digitally, like on your phone and social media, but that only really registers in your brain to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see it in real life and you can see people's eyes and the way they move. And you know, that connection is very palpable. Once that happened, I was like, oh, okay. This thing that you've done is translating, and it means something to people. It's more than just myself. You know, I realized that at that moment. And that was a really important epiphany mm-hmm. to have, you know. And then, I think it's beautiful. I'm grateful to be able to be in a position where the work that I do and the intention with which I do it can have an impact beyond just myself. And I feel like art, music is way more than like glamour or being popular or, you know, like stunting on people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like it has this significance that can be really profound if that's how it's approached. And yeah, I see right now globally, for South Asian folks, both the diaspora and people who are from their mother countries, you know, I think it's a really exciting time. It feels like we're on the precipice, you know.
Like it's blown up. Like yeah. South Asians are excelling to a different level this year. I don't know what's in the air, but in every arena, you're seeing South Asians just absolutely glowing in their glory and doing amazing, amazing things.
And not being put in the box anymore. You exactly. know, I feel like for so long, we've been expected to... just, you know, fulfill this very specific sliver of an identity that's been put forth for us across the globe.
And not even by us.
Exactly, by people that are not from the culture at all. But now we can do serious work. And I said this during that LA show, but I think like now I think there's an understanding within this very, very, very diverse community that we call the South Asian community that we don't have to take permission to do. We could do whatever, you know, like there could be a punk group from somewhere, wherever, that's all brown kids, and they can do that, and there's a space for it, you know, like there's a space for someone like me doing what I do, you know. We don't have to fit, and like there's this idea that, you know, that you have to be excellent or you have to put on for your culture in this way, and I think all that is shattered now. I think it's really dope that we're not expected to only do a song and dance number, you know what I mean? Like, which is also cool if that's what you're gonna do, great, but you can also do something else. And there's an audience for it, and there's a thirst for it, both within the community and outside the community. I mean, even you just look at Con right now, and like some of the awards that were given out for some of, I forget the name of the film, but Payal Kapadia just had a film that won, like, I think like the second most prestigious prize over there. That's what this is about, really, and I think we're in that time right now where it's happening.
It's long overdue.
For sure. And, you know, like, I entered the industry around, like, 2011. I had this Frank Ocean cover of a song called We All Try that came out that really kind of did the rounds on the internet. I was taking meetings with all major labels in the States, and it was very clear at that time that the world was not ready. I also knew that in retrospect, I know I wasn't ready at the time either. You know, it took me this 10 years to really understand myself and evolve and have a career blow up in the country I was born in, the city I was born in, really embrace all that. And now I'm in this position, you know. But I know 10 years ago, the globe wasn't ready for it. And now it's happening. And I think I'm honored to be doing it at the level that I'm doing it now. Sure.
For you to have such a deeply rooted Carnatic background here, especially growing up, I noticed that a lot of young people around me weren't really embracing traditional South Asian forms of music because one, it wasn't widely taught, and two, we kind of had the idea that we had to, again, assimilate and like blend in with everyone else, and that was just something that stood out too much.
Sure.
But I feel like now is the time that young people should start doing that, you know, seeing other artists like you being able to embrace and see those two worlds come together so beautifully. So what would you say to young South Asians who might be scared to take that first step into, you know, delving deep into traditional music but haven't yet?
Well, I would say this. I think, like, it's just like define your own cool. You know what I mean? Like, there's no need to look at what popular culture is doing to give you your cues. I mean, you could take them, but, and it might not be traditional music for everyone. Like, or, you know, like, I know, like, some of my good friends really pull from the folk music of Southern India and take that as their way, and they reinterpret, you know? So it's, I think there's so much to be said of understanding, taking the time, doing the work to understand what your roots are. And, my whole ethos is understanding, embracing, and digging into my roots, taking that, and then throwing it into the future, you know, throwing it into contexts sonically that don't necessarily make sense, and just see what happens. So I guess what I would say for young South Asian artists, musicians, or whatever field you're in, there is something so valuable in just understanding what your roots are. You know, just as like a human process, forget music and forget like artistry, just as a human being, there's so much that you can teach yourself mm-hmm. from really like truly and not just paying lip service to it, not just like, you know, putting the patina on, but really taking the time to dig into the depths of who you are culturally. And I think once you do that, once that process starts, a natural step from there is, okay, how am I going to take this and make this my own? Mm-hmm. I think that's the most exciting thing about today.
Yeah.
You know, with how small the world is with technology, once you're really grounded in yourself, there's like infinite scope of how you can take that and interpret it and throw it back out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so exciting. It took me this long. It took me like I said, 10, 12 years to understand and get to this point. But I think now with how the world works and also just like understanding, you know, like I feel like I have some cheat codes now because I've done it for a while. So like if whoever's listening or at any point, whoever kind of sees this, the biggest cheat code is like, don't doubt that part of yourself. You can't skip over any steps, mm-hmm. but like move boldly through the storm of identity crisis, you know, because I felt it. I know I said a little bit earlier that my relationship with Carnatic music didn't ever waver as such, mm-hmm. like as an identity thing. But my relationship with being Indian definitely wavered. You
okay.
know, like I definitely went through so many stages of not wanting to be who I was when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the music was the saving grace. That's the thing that mm-hmm. always pulled me back. But in so socially, fashion-wise, food, so many things, you know, just like I questioned so much of who I was. And it's natural. It's going to happen. It happens to anyone. But I think if you can forego that part or you can, define your own cool. Like I said, you know, understand that I think the coolest thing to do is to be able to just really dig into oneself and figure out what makes you unique.
Mm-hmm.
And let everything emanate from that. I just rambled a bunch.
No, I think you were going on like the idea of experimenting can be scary for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And also the idea of stepping away from something that is who you are mm-hmm. can also be scary. So when those two things happen to simultaneously happen together,
yeah.
the idea of coming back to music that also grounds you in your identity.
Yeah.
I think a lot of young people are kind of scared of taking that, you know, dive into
yeah.
figuring out who they are through music.
Yeah.
So I think, I think there's a lot to learn from you, and there's a lot of young South Asian artists who will follow in your footsteps.
Yeah,
so this is just the start.
For sure. And I think to piggyback off of that, I think leaning into the fear is super important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those points of fear are normally just like signals that mm-hmm. you're doing something that's going to propel you forward. I think fear is a very important part of life, not like succumbing to it, but when you identify that something's scaring you, like in the points of my life where I've had these like personally revolutionary transformations have mm-hmm. always come when I feel that like sense of like terror in my gut.
Yeah.
And then you really lean into it and trust that you have it within you to like do that.
Mm-hmm.
What comes out on the other side is always something magical every mm-hmm. single time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fear is inevitable, it's gonna happen because we're scared of change, we're scared of things that feel that we feel are outside of our comfort zone,
yeah.
and ultimately, we're kind of afraid of ourselves too, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there's the cliche of like, I'm you know, being afraid of your potential or whatever, but that's mm-hmm. very true. So, I think like not running away from the fear, but really leaning into it.
Mm-hmm.
And having the character to do that, because mm-hmm. what comes of it is almost always really special.
Always magic.
Yeah.
And, you know, young South Asians would starting to embrace those two sides themselves when they see other artists do that.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, creating that representation has been amazing. And seeing you perform at different venues all over the world has just been incredible, from tiny desks to Coachella and yesterday the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah.
You've performed at some amazing locations, but what is the stage that you most associate with being home?
That's a good question.
Makes you think back. You probably performed at like so many stages at this point.
Yeah, I've been performing for basically my whole life. I think like home, there's a temple in Chennai It's called the Kapali Kovil, and it's like 10, like a 5-minute walk from where I live over there. And I've been going there since I was as far back as I can remember. It's one of my favorite temples to go to. And I can't really move around freely in Chennai like that, but I still, you know, put the mask on, throw a hat on, and go. And I would say that is one place that feels like home. But also, you know, like, not to get super like philosophical with it, but I feel like my understanding or what I've understood is like home is not really necessarily a physical place, you know? So there's moments like when I did Coachella and I closed the set the same way I did last night with the Tamil prayer, that, you know, sometimes you tap into a moment that just makes you feel like you're like transcending and hovering above ground. And there's certain pieces of music that do that for me. And that song is definitely one of them, you know? So it's less like a physical space and more like some of these moments just make me feel like, oh, this is home, you know? But I mean, like we just did a San Francisco show last month between the two Coachella weekends. And that was, I kept telling myself it was just going to be like any other show and hometown show, it's not a big deal, but I got quite emotional on stage because it felt like a very much a full circle kind of moment. But yeah, I also feel like I'm pretty nomadic in the way I live. You know, we move around a lot, and that's I love moving around. So yeah, home is a very kind of I'm still understanding what that means to me. But yeah, sometimes it's just a song, sometimes it's a note, other times it is the physical place.
And I completely agree with you because I would like to end on the note that when we see artists like you being on stage and embracing, you know, so openly their culture and also who they are, that also feels like home for us as an audience. So
I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sid, for joining us today on SBS Spice. This was such a wonderful chat.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
And that was Sid Sriram. If you liked the episode, share it with your friends. Subscribe to SBS Spice wherever you get your podcasts and never miss an update. Find and follow us on Instagram at SBS Spice for more behind-the-scenes chit-chats, explainers, and pop culture patrols. We'll be back soon with another Chili in the Pod to see what makes South Asians tick or ick.